Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's FPC Radio Live on a Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. It's tax day, folks. If you haven't done your taxes yet, well, you're kind of screwed. Or get that extension one way or the other. I don't know. That's your problem. It's not mine. I did mine already. So, no, it is Tuesday. NBA and NHL playoffs are in full swing. We had a very brief Shohei Ohtani sighting yesterday at the Red Sox game. And, of course, Jalen Hurts signs a massive new contract with the Philadelphia Eagles. So, John, we're going to start right there just because, well, we haven't really had too much NFL news, big news, at least the last couple days, or at least when it comes to quarterbacks. And the quarterback we weren't expecting to hear news about, Jalen Hurts, signs a new massive deal with the Eagles, $255 million five-year extension. Good for the Eagles, good for Jalen Hurts. I mean, this looks like a win-win for them. They haven't had, you know, a quarterback that really they could rely on and really commit to since Donovan McNabb. You know, they thought they had it in Carson Wentz. They've had some journeymen along the way. Jalen Hurts is young. He looks like he's improving each and every year. And really, the sky seems to be the limit for him, and I think this is a solid contract, especially considering what's been thrown around already and what's been talked about with guys like Lamar Jackson and so on and so forth.
It makes sense, right? Because Jalen Hurts, we see in three seasons, has grown every single season as a passer. We know he can run the football. The other thing that you like about Jalen Hurts that you maybe question about someone like Kyler Murray or Carson Wentz is he's all in. His leadership ability is through the roof. His players, his teammates gravitate towards him, and that means a lot at that position, right? So when you sign into this contract, you know he's going to be in there early, stay late, be totally committed to the team, totally committed to improving himself as a player and as a leader. So this is a smart move by Philadelphia. Get it done so that they don't have to go through the drama of what Dallas did with Dak Prescott or what Baltimore is doing right now with Lamar Jackson. So he's your quarterback for the next half dozen years. It's a five-year extension. He still got $3 million this year, but this signing bonuses and all of that stuff in there. It turns out to be kind of a six-year, $258 million deal with $179 million of it guaranteed. Makes sense. Now, obviously, this is going to have some impact on what happens with Lamar Jackson because it's not fully guaranteed. So that means that only Deshaun Watson's contract is the only fully guaranteed contract in the NFL at this present time. So he would then be deemed an outlier, which is going to impact the Ravens and Lamar Jackson's negotiations.
Yeah, no, correct. And look, I mean, I think we all want to see Lamar Jackson get paid, no doubt about it. I don't think... All right, and I'm basing this on the current structure of how the NFL works, because, like, let's face it, I feel like every, much like baseball, you know, every player should get... They should get a fully guaranteed contract, especially in the NFL. It should all be guaranteed. You sign a contract, mm-hmm. You know, short of refusal to play, every single dollar should go to every player. That's what I believe for the most part in general. But based on the structure of how the NFL works and how the economy of the NFL works, giving a guaranteed contract, a fully guaranteed contract to Lamar Jackson is silly. And I don't blame the owners for not doing it. And to your point, Deshaun Jackson's an outlier. It's not a, you know, they're not setting a precedent. That's not how things are going to work moving forward. So I think the Ravens, you know, I think they're in the right for standing their ground, so to speak, and saying like, hey, look, we want to give you, assuming, you know, the reports are true that they want to give them at least something similar to what Jalen Hurts just got. I'm okay with that. I understand it from a ownership standpoint, but to your point about the, you know, Eagles and Hurts kind of getting this done and avoiding this situation altogether, that's another win on top of obviously signing him to a long-term deal. And that is, there's not this tension now that is between the organization, because this has been brewing between the Ravens and Lamar Jackson for a couple of years now. This isn't a one off season, all of a sudden things seem to be going wrong. No, this has been brewing for quite some time. And that's something you risk with Jalen Hurts or any star quarterback for that matter. If you really push the contract extension beyond what it should be. And we can see a trend now, John, that all these young guys are getting paid long before they're technically due. And that's because teams want to commit to their guy, and the Ravens seem to be doing it the exact opposite.
Well, Jalen Hurts actually benefits by being a second-round pick, right? Because they can do this quicker than if he was a first-round pick.
Right.
And I know Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are next in line. They were all in the same draft along with Tua. So you've got four guys that are established starters in the league. Obviously, you know, three of the top eight or nine quarterbacks in football came from that draft. And then you've also got Tua, who really played well last year before the injuries caught up. So this whole class of 2020 is going to get paid. But it's going to be in different stages. So, yeah, Jalen Hurts benefits a little bit by being a second-round pick, so now he can cash in a little bit earlier than some of the other quarterbacks. But, yeah, you would think Cincinnati's going to get Joe Burrow signed. Why wouldn't they, other than the fact that they're kind of a cash-poor franchise? I mean, it's always interesting to call billionaires cash-poor, but the Bengals, in comparison to maybe the Eagles or some other teams, are cash-poor, as are the Chargers, actually. So, but if you're a serious team, and you're serious about contending year in and year out, you get an extension done with Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert quickly, right? Because now you've got that position solved for the next 6, 8 years, whatever it may be. But, yeah, you're going to see these quarterbacks getting paid. And, you know, the thing with Philadelphia, like you said, they've avoided all the drama. They know who their quarterback is for the next 6 years. He's happy. The coaching staff's happy. And they can try to get back to the Super Bowl and win it this time. I ask you this, though. At this present time, who would you take, Jalen Hurts or Lamar Jackson going forward? If we were to pick one quarterback, who would it be?
Oof, that's a good one. Look, you can make an argument that, you know, short of an unfortunate absence late in the season, Jalen Hurts was well on his way to winning an MVP last year. I got to go with Jalen Hurts. He's younger, he's been healthier, and quite frankly, I think he's, and this is no disrespect to Lamar Jackson, I think obviously you can't bail out on him just because he hasn't finished the last couple of seasons, mm-hmm. but you also cannot ignore that. And
right.
especially considering how he plays the position and his age. And again, I mean, these are factors that you have to consider, especially if you're an outside team. I mean, the Ravens, it's a little bit different with the Ravens because he's already in the organization. They've already had a history, all that stuff. But if you're an outside team trying to decide whether or not it's worth giving up multiple draft picks or a massive contract to Lamar Jackson, those are things you have to consider. I mean, it's not a theory. These things happened. I mean, he missed time for injuries. And again, he plays a very physical position as a quarterback. So to answer your question, I think the answer is pretty easy. I think it's Jalen Hurts because I think they're both excellent quarterbacks. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
They're both excellent quarterbacks, but you consider Jalen Hurts' age. You consider where he's at in his development. And again, the big separator is kind of that MVP for Lamar Jackson, and obviously very deservingly so. But like I said, I mean, short of a couple missed games last year at the end of the season, I think Jalen Hurts is your NFL MVP last year. And all of a sudden, you know, he's won playoff games, something that Lamar Jackson hasn't done.
Yeah, I mean, he got to a Super Bowl and actually played great in that Super Bowl other than that fumble.
Yeah.
Right? Other than that, he was sensational in that game. If that play doesn't happen, Philadelphia probably wins the game and he's the MVP of the game. The thing about Lamar Jackson is both of these guys are still, you know, like entering their prime. Lamar's been in the league 5 years, Jalen Hurts 3 years. They're both actually young for their graduating class. So, you know, I think they're going to play for a while. The Lamar Jackson injury last year to me seemed to be more of a business decision. So maybe you take that away that he's injury prone, but then that also questions how bought into it is he, whereas Jalen Hurts got hurt also, not lower body, upper body, which is a little bit different. And he came back, you know, sooner rather than later. So you can kind of weigh in all of that. Lamar Jackson's injuries came while he was in the pocket or just getting out the pocket. It didn't necessarily come when he was running. I would take Jalen Hurts as well. He's just such a sturdy guy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy is like, you know, lifts with alignment. And not that Lamar Jackson's a spindly guy. He's a pretty impressive athlete himself. They're both great athletes and both sensational football players. But Hurts just sturdy. I mean, he almost built like a fullback. So, yeah, I would probably take him at this point. But, you know, it is a good debate between these two quarterbacks.
Yeah, and look, as Joel points out, he would take Hurts or Jackson. And look, you're not going to lose either way. I mean, again, assuming Lamar Jackson's healthy, and yeah, to your point, like, these injuries didn't directly, you know, obviously they came from inside the pocket, so it's not what you would think. But it's more about the wear and tear. You know what I mean? Lamar Jackson's got more of that Cam Newton in him, where it's like he kind of finds that physicalness. You know, not as much as Josh Allen. Josh Allen's someone we're both concerned about long-term. If he keeps playing the position the way he's been playing, that, yeah, he might have a couple good seasons ahead of him, but injuries will very quickly catch up, and it's not necessarily one big injury. It's the breakdown of the body. Mm-hmm. You take all those hits over time. You take all that pounding at a position you're not supposed to necessarily, because you need that flexibility. You need that ability with your arm and your legs. And again, you start, you know, wearing down early. That's going to affect your whole way of how you play. So I think that's the concern with Lamar Jackson, who has already obviously had some injury concerns, especially when it comes to that. I think Jalen Hurts is a little bit more, he plays the position a little bit more elusively. Like, he's not seeking contact, but he can create opportunities with his legs and avoid defenders that way. I don't see him as a physical type runner in the mold of Jackson and say Josh Allen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then those are always the concerns, and it's not even, you know, a really catastrophic type injury like blowing out your knee or really suffering an extreme ankle injury. Even little injuries, or at least we can call them little injuries, like thumbs or whatever. I mean, we saw Russell Wilson. He has not appeared to recover from when he injured one of his fingers a couple of years ago. You know, we see that happen. Those are also things that quarterbacks have to deal with. If they're hit as often as they are, they're going to suffer some of these even nagging injuries, which will derail how they play.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, again, if you're a team, you got to consider that. So, all right, so we're going to move on. Yesterday, Stanley Cup playoffs kicked off. And the Bruins did not play their best game. And this is what's crazy. This is how good they are right now. No Patrice Bergeron. There's been an illness going through the locker room, which, you know, they've been dealing with a couple weeks. Ho-hum, you know, they've won 9 in a row. I mean, they just... this team is scary good, because they probably gave you about a 70% effort yesterday. Florida looked like they controlled a lot of the clock. They outshot the Bruins for a while. They were controlling play for a decent amount of time, and they were never really in it. They lost 3-1, and the Bruins had full control of that game. And it was just kind of really an impressive showing from a team that, like, look, I think getting that first win of the postseason is huge for the Bruins, because obviously a lot of the pressure, a lot of the talk comes from, you know, fans and sports radio and stuff like that. And, you know, for weeks we've been hearing other fans of other teams saying, oh, they're going to get swept like the Lightning. Well, that's impossible now. They've already won more games than the 2018-2019 Lightning after their 62-win season. So getting that win off your shoulders and just starting off 1-0, I think does wonders for this team. And again, I mean, Patrice Bergeron's not injured. It's just a little bit of a sickness, so he will be back. I think they made a statement yesterday. It was just, again, 70% effort against what I felt was a, you know, reach from the bottom of the barrel type of effort from the Panthers. And the Panthers lost 3-1 and really weren't ever in control of that game, at least from the scoreboard standpoint.
I mean, the difference in points this year is incredible, right? 135 for the Bruins, 92 for Florida. That's a 43-point difference. I mean, that's, you know, you don't see that in the NHL, no matter the best team in the playoffs against the 16th best team in the league. I mean, the difference isn't always that wide. I think they'll be just fine. Obviously, getting that first win is so important, because now they can't be the 2019 Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think this next game is also important, because game twos can kind of sneak up on you. The team is more comfortable playing on the ice surface. They've been in the city for a few days. But again, jumping out to an early lead, important. They got up, what, 1-0, then 2-0. Then when Florida made it 2-1, then the Bruins were able to get that insurance goal. So, yeah, getting off to a good start tomorrow. Maybe they come out with a stronger effort and kind of take total control of the series, and then you go from there. I always worry about that first series. It seems like when you get through that, now you kind of have your mojo going into the second series, and now the pressure is – there's an incredible amount of pressure on the Bruins, right? I mean, this historic team playing a team that barely snuck in. So that's something that, you know, you have to deal with. So good effort tomorrow night, get a 2-0 lead, and then you should be on your way against an overmatched Florida team who's pretty darn good, but it's just the Bruins are better.
Well, look, there's no team in the Stanley Cup playoffs right now that has more pressure than the Bruins. And and it sounds silly because they had such a good season, but it's not only the historical nature of their season. You know, this is a team that, since winning the Cup in 2011, has gone back twice. And I don't want to sit there and say they gave away the series against Chicago because they were down 3-2, but they gave away an opportunity to win that series late in game 6, obviously, we all remember, and it's a bad memory if you're a Bruins fan. And then I do believe they gave away the cup in 2019. So there's a lot of pressure on top of the fact that, you know, is this Patrice Bergeron's last go around? Is this David Krejci's last go around? And then you add in the fact that they have 65 wins and 135 points, both records, and all these things. So there's a massive amount of pressure on this team. And yesterday just kind of showed me how they're dealing with it. And it's, again, credit to Jim Montgomery and the coaching staff, credit to Patrice Bergeron and all the leaders on this team. But they never look over or under hyped. They're so evenly, you know, just evenly focused, singularly focused. They're never panicked. They're never too over the top. They understand the situation, and we saw that yesterday. Like, look, you know, Florida, like I said, they were out shooting the Bruins 2-1 for much of the first two periods. And yeah, was it concerning? Maybe. Florida was, they like to shoot a lot from the point, so, you know, I'm not necessarily, I thought the Bruins were getting higher quality opportunities despite being outshot at that point. But that's something where other teams might panic because they're getting outshot, or maybe they get on their heels a little bit. The Bruins just kind of keep playing their game. And if a mistake happens, it doesn't impact them. It doesn't create this ripple effect. And again, we see that when they can go out there without their, you know, best player, well, you know, without Patrice Bergeron, their captain, and playing a, by their standards, a subpar game, and going out and really just taking care of business and winning 3-1. Like, this tells me that if the Bruins come out and play their game and are 100% healthy, this Florida team just doesn't have a chance against this Bruins team. And that's something we've seen from a lot of teams all season. And I keep saying, we did a Big Bad Bruins podcast yesterday. I've been saying to Bruins fans, there's no need not to be confident, and it's not overconfidence. It's just basing it off what we've seen all season. And look, they were the first team to win 16 games to start the season, and they're going to be the first and only team to win 16 games to start this postseason. So one down and 15 more to go, and it seems like, yep, this is, you know, the Bruins are ready for this.
They're just so deep, right? I mean, so Bergeron doesn't play last night. Saka moves up to the first line, and they just continue on their merry way. It's just a deep, deep roster. I mean, there's going to be some players that don't play that are darn good, right? You know, a seventh defenseman. Well,
Matt Grizzlick sat yesterday, and he's right. And they said it on the broadcast, he's like plus 42 on the season, you know, and plus minus. You know, this is a good player.
Yeah, I mean, you're building your lineup from the top down, right? Sometimes you build it from the bottom up because you're just trying to see, you know, who's the walk forward, you know, who maybe isn't all that good. The Bruins have, like, extra guys. They've built this roster, and it goes all the way to in net as well. We have two accomplished goaltenders. So that, you know, Allmark's injured or, you know, is not playing well, you can go with Jeremy Swayman and feel pretty confident. So, yeah, this is such a deep team. And, again, I keep harping on that they just can beat you in different ways. You know, 3-1 last night. Maybe tomorrow night it's 5-3. And maybe they go to Florida and win a 1-0 defensive struggle. I mean, they can just win in any fashion, which is what makes a great team in any sport.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you look across the league last night and you saw, which again, this is another reason why Stanley Cup playoffs are, I think, bar none, the best postseason in any sport, at least in terms of North American professional sports. Double overtime, single overtime, and you had a team like Edmonton, who I believe is ultimately going to face the Bruins in the Stanley Cup final. You saw them blow a lead late and then lose in overtime. And it's not that, and this is why, again, this really kind of hammers home the point as to why the Bruins are such a outlier in this league right now. You know, Edmonton, they didn't finish with the top overall seed, but they technically, John, have had a better record than the Bruins since January. Now, that means basically near perfection, because that's the only way you're going to have a better record than the Bruins. But that's kind of the point. Like, they're probably the best example of the closest thing to the Bruins. And you saw a bit of inexperience and angst yesterday in that team against LA, against a team that has won in the past. So it's not easy to win in this league. So the fact that the Bruins were able to go out, not play their best, whether that was just, you know, kind of, sometimes you get overhyped for these games. And look, they've been thinking about the playoffs for months now. Months. Really, I mean, it didn't take long for them to realize that the big picture this season was the playoffs. So, yeah, maybe there was a little anxiety to start the game, and maybe they're, you know, they've had sick players, so maybe they weren't all 100%. So despite all that, they went out and took care of business against, you know, what I think is a pretty good team in Florida. I think they have questionable goaltending, although Lyon played okay yesterday. I mean, a couple soft, you know, that one soft goal really kind of hurt you in the long run. But I think in contrast to what we saw yesterday from some of these other teams, yeah, the Bruins are really good, and that win last night was very encouraging for being the first win of the postseason.
Yeah, you get it out of the way, take a little pressure off, and if you can just, like I said, have a better effort the next game, which is tomorrow night, then you should be up 2-0, and at that point you're in control of the series going forward.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, anyways, let's before we wrap it up, I do want to touch on the NBA, because obviously the NBA playoffs are going on, and the big talk last night, obviously. The stomp heard around the world, John. I'm not sure. Like, look, I mean, I'm not going to put 100% of the blame on Draymond Green, because his leg was held. But, I mean, he very clearly, deliberately stomped, like made a little bit more than a stomp on Sabonis. So, like, I think he's going to get suspended, right? You would think, at least a game.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of his history as well. If this had been Klay Thompson or someone else, probably not. But since it's Draymond Green, I would think a 1-game suspension.
Yeah. And look, I mean, they're already down 2-0. You know, this is a team that all season has really struggled. And, you know, I think maybe, you know, the history, obviously, being the defending champions, having Steph Curry and all that, you know, you're never going to lose confidence in them. But do you have any hope that they're going to be able to kind of dig themselves out of this hole? Or is this kind of going to be a sputtering end to their championship defense season?
Don't they feel a little bit like the 2022 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, a team that had championship pedigree with Tom Brady? Golden State has Steph Curry. They're both still great at what they do, but the teams just aren't as good as you had hoped for or expected. And remember, all season we're like, okay, just get Tampa Bay into the postseason, and then they'll be able to beat all these teams that, you know, they have the edge at a quarterback, and they still lost to Dallas handily in the wild card round. And here's Golden State, which was 11-30 on the road. They just can't win on the road. And thought they're down 2-0 against Sacramento, losing both games in Sacramento. It's going to be a tough haul to win 4 out of the last 5. And the Warriors have always been pretty much front runners throughout this entire run because they're really good. You know, they generally have home court advantage, get up 2-0, and then have complete control of the series. I didn't realize that Draymond Green was going to turn into Robert De Niro in Goodfellas when he was stomping on Billy Bats at that point, but that's Draymond Green. And maybe some frustration there. And, you know, again, Sacramento's a young team. De'Aaron Fox, I think, has been the emerging star of the playoffs so far. He's sensational, probably the fastest guy in the league from baseline to baseline. Has a similar skill set to Ja Morant, just a little bit different. But Sacramento, they are just on such a roll. And, again, that home crowd was very, very loud because they hadn't been to the postseason since 2006.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I think Sacramento's in good shape to take care of business, even if they can maybe get one in San Francisco and wrap it up in Game 5. Because if the series goes into Game 6, Game 7, now that experience can be a factor. But I think Sacramento's in really good shape after being up 2-0.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this is a team in Golden State. A lot of people will rejoice if they get knocked out in the first round, and I get it. I understand. I mean, unless you're a Warriors fan, I mean, Steph Curry, as much as he's a superstar, it's like the cockiness from the team rubs you the wrong way, like the over-the-top cockiness. Like, that's fair to say, right? The Golden State has a lot of that in them. Their
fan base is insufferable. They make the Patriots fan base look, you know, moderate. and they also carry themselves like they invented basketball. Basketball didn't exist till Steph Curry was drafted in 2009. And then, you know, I'm going to go on maybe on a quick tangent here, but, you know, when he won his fourth title last year, people are like, well, he's actually better than LeBron James. Well, no, he's not. I'm sorry. He's a better shooter. Other than that, LeBron James is better in every facet of the game. Won titles with three different teams with lesser teammates. So there's my tangent for the day.
Yeah, and trust me, I agree with you there. And look, I mean, you go back to like last year, like what was that comment that Klay Thompson said about like swearing or something? It's like, you know, they pull a clip of him, you know, cursing on an interview or something like that. Like, right. You know what I mean? It's just like kind of like what you said, the better than you, the, you know, we invented basketball type of attitude. And look, I mean, they've won four titles. You know, what can you say to that other than, well, you're going to nitpick all the way they carry themselves. But to that point, when they do lose, or if they do lose in this series, I think a lot of people will certainly rejoice. But going over to the Suns series, though, because obviously we talked a lot about Kevin Durant, went really, really quiet there late in the game. Any concern over that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I just expected them to beat the Clippers. And again, they still may. It's only one game. But, you know, Kawhi Leonard outplayed Kevin Durant. And, of course, Kawhi Leonard, you know, pretty much takes the regular season off. So he's got plenty of energy once we get to the postseason. Durant wasn't very aggressive in the fourth quarter. It was more Devin Booker, and Booker's a really good closer as well. Chris Paul struggled and now looks his age, which is approaching 38. Russell Westbrook had one of the weirdest games you'll ever see, 3-for-19 from the floor, but he still came up with some big rebounds and some nice defensive plays. But I would expect Durant to be more aggressive. That's always been my criticism of Durant at times, is he becomes passive out there, and he's so darn good, he should never be passive. But, I was surprised that the Clippers were able to win game one. And again, Kawhi Leonard was the best player on the floor, which oftentimes he is in the postseason. He's that good, and he has a lot of energy left because he hasn't played much this season.
No, and well, he hasn't played much the last few seasons. I mean, this guy's played 82 games over the last 4 years, right? Something like that.
I think Brady played more games the last 4 years.
Seriously.
I'm not that far off. Last week I tweeted out Zion Williamson, since entering the league in 2019, played 114 games. In that same period, Brady's played 74. You know, so
that's funny. That's
difference in age and difference in sports.
Well, it's like, look, I mean, if it pays off in the Clippers, I mean, I don't think anyone takes the Clippers seriously. I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's the Clippers. You know what I mean? It's like, who cares? It's the Clippers. It's like the Chargers. No one's going to take the Chargers serious.
In a sense, yeah. No, you're right. They'll find a way to lose. They were up, 3-1 over Denver in the bubble a couple years ago, waiting to go to the Western Conference Finals, and they lost 3 straight, and Denver ended up playing the Lakers. Yeah. Meaning the Lakers also are looking pretty darn good.
So,
the West is wide open. Wide open.
I knew you couldn't go too long without mentioning your Lakers or your LeBrons, and, you know, by virtue of LeBrons, it's the Lakers. But, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, interesting kind of turn of events, even just a couple games in, just across the league in general, not just in the West. I mean, obviously, the Lakers are up. you know, Tyler Hero breaks his hand. You have Giannis getting a MRI on his back. It came back clean, but still, those aren't things that you want if you're fans of the Heat or the Bucks. Those aren't things you want to necessarily be dealing with in game one of what should be or what you hope is going to be a long postseason.
Yeah, no, I mean, things turn pretty quickly, especially Tyler Hero is a really good scorer, 20 points per game scorer. He's out for the postseason. We'll see what Giannis is like when he comes back tomorrow night after falling on his tailbone.
Yeah.
Those are interesting injuries. You got Jaylen Brown dealing with that cut, but that's something that I think will, you know, obviously heal itself up.
Back injuries are something though that you got to, especially with a big guy like Giannis and how physical he is, you're not going to get much rest. And really a lot of those back injuries require a decent amount of rest, so you're not re-aggravating it. So yeah, I do, you know, despite it coming back, you know, the MRI or whatever coming back clean, you know, there is got to be a little bit of concern about, you know, is this going to be a lingering thing? Because he's not going to get a week off to rest. I mean, short of the Bucks sweeping their series and then having, you know, their future opponents go to seven, you know, you're not really going to get a lot of time off in these series to get adequate rest. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of concern there, especially, again, for a team like the Bucks who are the one seed and have a lot of high expectations to go back to the finals.
Yeah, and then in the Western Conference, you got John Morant, who, you know, injured his hand late in the first game, may not play in the second game. So that series, you know, is obviously in the favor of the Lakers, being up one game to none. Anthony Davis is always an injury concern. I mean, when he couldn't move his shoulder or his arm at that point at the end of the second quarter, I'm like, well, he's not coming back. And then he came back. And the key with the Lakers is obviously the health of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, but also when those guys are committed defensively, it has a trickle-down effect on the entire roster because if your two best players are that invested defensively, everybody else steps up, and all of a sudden you got Rui Hachimura and Austin Reeves, you know, looking like Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant out there the other night. So that was quite helpful for the Lakers. Look, on the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Staff, which of course is heard here on full press coverage, I picked the Lakers and Celtics in the finals.
Wait, wouldn't that just be fitting, though?
It would only be the 13th time they'd meet in the finals. This one would be kind of unexpected because the Lakers kind of fumbled all over themselves this year into the seventh seed, but we could see that again. Why not?
Hey, look, I'd be all right with that. You know, we'd really put an end to LeBron's run there by stomping him out. And I say by we, clearly I'm a member of the Celtics.
I thought of that, but the last guy I think you want to see walking into TD Garden in early June is LeBron. Since he's won five straight series against the Celtics, so you know, be careful what you wish for.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. He used to. There was a couple times he lost early in his career, so it'd be a nice bookend if it worked out that way. So, again, it's been an intriguing start. It's been an intriguing start for both playoff postseasons. Obviously, the hockey NHL postseason just having four games played yesterday, but the NBA is certainly starting to create some early drama, and we're all here for that. So that's going to do it for us here today. You can give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live, and of course, stay tuned later in the week when we come back and keep reacting to all these great playoff matchups and maybe some more NFL news. Clock is ticking on Aaron Rodgers, the New York Jets. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we will talk to you soon.